Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, 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 one and all, to another edition of Extra Innings, part of the official Redbird Rants podcast, where we do a little something extra every single time. I'm your host, Tito Rivera, and I'm joined alongside by my co-editor, Dr. Michael Miles. Dr. Miles, how are you tonight?
I'm doing well, and welcome to our special guest. Thank you so much for joining us, and we'll get to that. But, fellas, I am outside in the rain with my two sons working on building more of the fence for our pig pasture. Yes, you heard that correctly, our pig pasture. So bear with me, but I'm in the rain, and I hope you guys are in nicer conditions.
I'm just merely indoors. No big deal. And we are also joined by a contributor, Josh McDonald. Josh, how are you tonight?
I'm doing good. I feel like you probably could have put a little bit more like of an emphasis on like our best contributor or one of the greatest contributors. But you know, that's just me.
Yeah, well, you know nothing, Josh.
And we can say he's definitely our best at hyperbolic self glorification.
Sure. Yeah. We'll go with that. And tonight we do have a special guest tonight, and he is a writer for the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. We are proud to welcome Mr. Jose de Jesus Ortiz. Jose, how are you tonight?
I'm doing well. How are you guys?
We are doing just fine. Again, thank you so much for joining us tonight. We want to give a special shout-out to Crash STL, or Gene Bonds, as pretty much everybody knows him now, for getting us connected with you and our other special guests in previous renditions of Extra Innings. So, Jose, let's get right to it. We want to know a little bit about you. You're new to the STL area. You're new to the Post-Dispatch. So my first question to you is, you know, how did you get into the business of sports writing?
Oh, wow. That's a lot. I mean, there's not enough time for that discussion. Long story short, I didn't know what part of journalism I wanted to be in, whether I wanted to be in a foreign correspondent or if I wanted to be a sports writer or a news writer, a political writer. I took my first internship and just kept taking different types of internships. I took a copy editing internship at the Houston Chronicle. I took a internship at the Mexico City Bureau of the Dallas Morning News. And then I took a copy editing internship. I took a sports internship at the Long Beach Press-Telegram, and I had more fun on the sports internship. And then I was able to just pretty much I stayed on the sports front, but I didn't always want to be a sports writer. I actually wanted to be a foreign correspondent until I went and worked in a foreign bureau, and then I realized just how it was a lot of fun, but it just wasn't. I had more success early as a sports writer than I expected to have on my way to become a foreign correspondent. So I decided to pursue sports writing.
Awesome. And so for everybody that doesn't know, Jose was, you know, the lead Astros beat writer from 2001 through 2009. And now he's now writing about St. Louis Cardinals and occasionally the St. Louis Blues, but I think your passion is definitely within the baseball stratosphere. Let me ask you this. What is the biggest difference in covering the St. Louis Cardinals versus the Houston Astros?
Well, there's no difference to be. Well, for me, my job is different.
Sure.
I covered as a columnist. You're expected, the job requirement is to have an opinion. So, as a beat writer, which is what I was in Houston, you're expected to just pretty much cover the facts and not, you know, you're not writing opinion pieces. So that's a huge difference.
Okay.
But other than that, there wasn't, you know, the St. Louisans care more about baseball. Like baseball is the number one thing here. Whereas in Houston, football is the number one thing. When I was recruited back to Houston in 2001 from the Mets beat, the Astros was the top beat. You know, and they had a pretty strong team, just like the 97 to 2001 run with that team, you know, with a lot of great players. But then once the Texans came into the NFL and Houston got another NFL franchise, then it was clear. I mean, you listen to sports radio and all they talk about is football.
Right.
And then, whereas in Houston, in St. Louis, people cannot get enough of the Cardinals. People care about the Cardinals. They're passionate about the Cardinals. They're knowledgeable about the Cardinals. The St. Louisans are as educated about the Cardinals as Houstonians are about the Texans. I mean, and St. Louis doesn't have an NFL franchise, so pretty much, you know, the Cardinals own the year here.
Yeah, and RIP to the Rams, even though they're still in Los Angeles now. But, yeah, and I think that's an interesting way to put it, because I think we all know that, you know, Texas is known for football. But they do have some obvious baseball roots, and, you know, you have the Astros winning the World Series last year. And so you would think that there's probably going to be a bigger push just because of the popularity of the players on the Astros, such as Altuve and Correa right now. What do you think, you know, now that you've joined the STL Cards Twitterverse, let's call it that, What do you notice about the interaction with fans on Twitter when it comes to the St. Louis Cardinals? Because I know a lot of times, you know, we as fans are very, very hypercritical of certain things. But I mainly lean on the fact is because we care. So what do you think?
What is your question, though? Because you started with the interactions and you ask,
sure,
general, like, are you making a more specific question?
No. Yeah. So what I'm asking is what do you make of the interaction with the fans on Twitter, specifically with, you know, within the STL Cards Twitterverse?
Well, I've always tried to be very accessible. And you know, so I interact, but I don't know if it's like, I'm trying to be nice here, and like I don't let one segment of the fan base kind of color my opinion of the whole fan base, but it's
sure,
you know, it has its fair share of people who go over the line. But I think for the most part, the great majority of them are very knowledgeable and respectful. They have opinions. It's, you know, people who are upset tend to be a little bit louder.
Sure.
And sometimes they forget that it's a 162 game season. And a lot of times in St. Louis, it feels like it's a 162 one-game seasons instead of a 162-game season. You know, I remember the game in Milwaukee where Tyler Lyons and Dominic Leone blew it, and everybody was crucifying Mike Matheny. And the Cardinals weren't even a week into the season. You know, hadn't even played a whole week's worth of games. And I tried to remind people, or 10 days worth of games or whatever. And I tried to remind people that, you know, that wasn't on Matheny. That sometimes right. The manager does the right moves and it still doesn't work. And you know, I've been here 2 years and it's almost been a reversal in that at first people were very defensive and very angry when I was critical of the Cardinals. And now, you know, sometimes I get, you know, people act as though I'm an apologist for the Cardinals. It all depends how you view it. And that's the beauty of sports writing, right? Like sports writing is the one segment of the paper where people go to read a story to verify what they already saw.
Right.
Or the other sections of the paper, you go to find out what you don't know, right?
Sure.
You know, you go to read the stories. Whereas you go read a game story of the Cardinals, you want to verify what you saw. You want to verify justify your opinion, you know, like.
Sure.
And sometimes, you know, I've seen 2 decades worth of soccer in L.A., New York, Houston, and now St. Louis and Florida. And I like to think that experience helps me in a way that it provides something different than say people who have only covered one major league market. So I like to be able to point out that, hey, you know, these complaints that you have about Matheny, every team that I've covered has had a fan base with similar complaints about it. You know, every manager is ripped for the way he treats his bullpen. You know, if the Cubs don't win the World Series, how do you think Joe Maddon is remembered for his use of the bullpen in the World Series? You know, I mean, like every, you know, Joe Maddon got lucky in Game 7. Because if they lose that Game 7, he is never forgiven for using Chapman in Game 6. The way he used them. You know what I'm saying? Like every manager, you know, I covered A.J. Hinch. A.J. Hinch is, you know, is considered one of the best managers in baseball right now. And when he was in Arizona, he was deemed, you know, not ready, not very good. And his joke was, you're only as good as your bullpen. So...
And that actually, I kind of want to hit on that because I read your article this morning, and that is exactly what you put in there, that, you know, Mike Matheny, or, you know, and you're kind of saying it this way, is that any manager is as good as his, you know, is his bullpen. And I think, you know, I think you raise a fair point, you know, and I've kind of come around on that as well, as, you know, as a fan, it's very twofold. You know, you can blame the manager, but the manager doesn't pitch. Ultimately, it comes down to the players performing. And sometimes they do and sometimes they don't. And you know, your example of Chapman in the World Series is a prime example of that. Dr. Miles and Josh, you guys jump in whenever. I don't want to dominate the conversation. Let's go ahead and continue our Cardinal conversation with Jose De Jesus Ortiz here from the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. Waino's injury, it seems to come out of nowhere. You know, what kind of information do you have, or how do you feel about that injury?
Well, I'll be honest. I was at the game Saturday, but Sunday I was at Vanderbilt with my daughter on a soccer trip. So I wasn't around yesterday. But elbow inflammation is not good on a pitcher, obviously. And I don't know. I just don't know that. I have to speak to Waino, obviously, but I worry that he might not be able to make it out of the season, because you know, there are a lot of miles on that arm. There are a lot of miles on that elbow that's already been reconstructed once, right? So I don't know. But the good thing for the Cardinals, like I sat down and I chatted with John Mozeliak Saturday for a few minutes, and we were just chatting and you know, and I asked about Waino and Waka and just who, you know, like who's the fifth starter, and pretty much Wainwright's your fifth starter. They started him in the home opener. They lined him up originally as the number two starter, which I thought was a huge mistake, because you want your best pitchers lined up against the other team's best pitchers, right? So the thought should have been Martinez, and then perhaps even Luke Weaver, Waka, Michaelis, Wainwright. Like, there is no reason to put Wainwright behind Martinez, and then he ended up going on the DL. But they brought him back for the home opener, but he was still lined up, you know, essentially the number two or whatever. But he's not your number two, so you can't have Waino competing against another team's number two. And pitchers will always tell you, well, I'm not competing against him. I'm competing against their lineup. But no, you are competing against him, because if that guy's pretty good, you have to be pretty good to give your team a chance to win. You know, I covered the Astros when you had Roy Oswalt, Andy Pettit, Roger Clemens, 1-2-3. Roger Clemens won a Cy Young as a number three starter for the Astros. And, you know, he was competing against number three starters, and Roy Oswalt, you know, won 20 games competing against other teams' aces. And that's the best way to set up your team for success, because you want your guy, you want Carlos Martinez starting games against the other team's best starter. You want Martinez able to hold the Reds when Homer Bailey's starting, right? You want to be able to get wins when Bailey holds your offense to three runs, you know, and that's the – so long story, I worry about Waino. I feel for him, because, you know, he's the biggest competitor, the best leader on that team, and just one of the true good guys in baseball. So I hope that this is one of those injuries. And he tweeted yesterday, "I'll be back soon," or something to that effect. I forget the exact quote, but I just don't, you know, I don't know that the Cardinals can count on him for the full year. But as I wrote in today's blog or column, you know, how many teams can just bring up Flaherty to take that spot? Many fans would argue that Flaherty is the better option than Wainwright. Last week, people were clamoring for Flaherty to take Waka's spot, right? Every time somebody struggles, we were bound to hear, why is clarity wasting away. Some people were talking about a 6-man rotation, and I told this to, I'll be honest, I'll tell you, I told this to Mo on Saturday. I said, I think that is kind of ridiculous, because if you have a pitching staff where fans are saying, Walker should be out of the rotation, which I thought was ridiculous, or Wainwright should be out of the rotation. Well, if you're saying that, why would you want to have 6-man, and he was right, you're better off having a 4-man rotation, So few teams have the luxury that the Cardinals have of being able to just, okay, well, Wainwright goes on the DL, let's bring Flaherty, the guy that everybody wants. He just threw his first complete game in the minors.
Jose, this is Josh. I think you hit on a couple of points I was kind of focusing on with my question, but I feel like Wainwright is probably one of the most divisive guys when it comes for the fan base. I think you see a lot of the people, they're either, Wainwright's been with this team for so long, he's the leader, like you said, he's the heart and soul of the team, essentially, outside of Molina, and they want him to go out on a good note. But then you have the other half that are saying, we have a better option. If we're going to compete, we need to go with Flaherty. And Wainwright, I think, is interesting because he is so open. And I think they talked about it on the broadcast yesterday. He's so open with everything. He called all the media together before spring training and talked about all the retirement talk. He tweets about his injuries. You don't see that a lot in guys. Do you think that Wainwright is hard to kind of criticize about, potential injuries, how they can be serious, because of that side of the fan base that believes he can do no wrong because he's been here for so long?
Well, first of all, I think anybody who criticizes a guy for being hurt is wrong. I was going to use the word idiot, but I'm going to try to be nice. But I don't think anybody should ever criticize a person for getting hurt, because, it's just, to me, that's ridiculous. So any fans who would criticize Wainwright for getting hurt are, that's out of line. You could criticize the organization for, what isn't out of bounds is if Wainwright does something that, if he's not performing, okay, that's okay. Or if you want to criticize the organization for using Wainwright. But what fans need to understand is Wainwright earned his contract. Wainwright is making, is it $19 million this year?
Yeah, 19 and a half.
You know what I mean? He's earning $19.5 million. So you're just not going to get rid of a guy who's making that much money, but more importantly, who's done so much for your organization. In my opinion, Wainwright should write his own ticket out of town. He should, if I'm running the Cardinals, I believe in him enough to let him decide when he's done. Because I know he's proud enough, and I know he's realistic enough to know when, I can't do this. He's not, there are some guys, I've covered some guys where you absolutely know that it's about themselves and not the team. Every team has a few of those guys. Wainwright isn't one of those guys. Wainwright is the team guy, and he's going to do what's best for the team. So with that in mind and everything he's accomplished and everything he's meant to this organization, I'm going to ride Wainwright until he's done in his mind. And I think he deserves that respect from the Cardinals organization. Wainwright isn't a divisive figure, but fans may there's some who are loyal, and then there are others who don't see the big picture. And the big picture is Wainwright is earning $19.5 million. He's done quite a bit for this organization. He deserves to be in this rotation when healthy. Clearly,
yeah. I agree 100% with what you're saying, and I think it was Bernie the other day I was listening was making a really good point. The Cardinals got really lucky when they signed Wainwright to that contract, because if it was even a little bit later, you're looking at, like, based on what he was doing, Clayton Kershaw money essentially. So they saved themselves a lot of money in that sense. And I think that your point to the fans is really spot on. I think that the term best fans in baseball has taken what was like a moniker of the team, and it's now just become kind of a sarcastic verbiage used to talk about the fans that have those opinions that are so outlandish and are willing to degrade a guy because he's hurt. Do you think that there's that vibe elsewhere outside of this conversation?
I'll be honest, I haven't heard it, because I don't follow many people. I don't follow fans on Twitter, and partly because of some of the vile racist stuff that I got early on in St. Louis, I've muted like so many Cardinals fans that I'm probably like the last person who can really tell you what the angry fans are saying, because most of the fans that who I interact tend to be very reasonable, knowledgeable. So I don't know what the knuckleheads are saying. I can only tell you what reasonable, cool, level-headed Cardinals fans are, because those are the ones I interact with.
I guess that makes us cool then, right?
There you go.
Hey, one of us is a knucklehead. Don't forget. I have a question, and if you don't mind, Mr. Ortiz, if you would take this, and if this is going too personal, please just let us know, and we certainly don't want to put you in an uncomfortable place. But can you talk to us about that racism that you just alluded to? I think that's, very painful for you, admittedly so, but it's also, unfortunately, a piece of the world that you encountered when you came to St. Louis and elsewhere. Do you mind talking about that at all?
Yeah, I wouldn't say, trust me, it's not painful to me. I mean, I grew up in the inner city as the one Mexican family in a predominantly black neighborhood. I'm married to a white woman from Iowa. I spent 3 years in New York. So I love everybody. I take pride in having not only embraced diversity, but like diversity has been a hallmark of my life. It wasn't painful to me to deal with that. I just pretty much would just, it was kind of like a nuisance, because at first I would interact with them or kind of expose them. And then I realized, like, I'm just feeding their ego by letting these people into my life, and I've learned, and I make this joke, like, never bring never bring somebody who drives you crazy to dinner. And that being when I'm at home with my family, I don't think about any of those people because they're not at dinner with me. I don't want them at dinner with me. But it was, I'll tell you an early experience, like my first week in St. Louis, I made the observation that the Cardinals defense was way too sloppy. And a Cardinals fan decides to tell me to go back to Taco Bell or something stupid about Taco Bell. And I said, congratulations, you win the award for first racist comment in St. Louis. And, you know, I was very fortunate to have developed a very good bond with Astros fans because I interacted with them, you know, I would go drinking with them. I'd have, you know, dinners to discuss my Hall of Fame with them. Like, I love interacting with readers on a personal level. And I have a lot of Latino sports writer friends who have helped me, or I've helped them, or who've mentored me, or I've mentored them. And they pretty much got on Twitter and got on this guy. And some of my most rabid Astros friends just crushed this guy on Twitter to the point where first he made his account private, and then he just completely got off Twitter. And I felt bad because it was almost like bullying, because they got on him. He never realized, and it wasn't St. Louis fans, it was Houston fans who kind of pointed out to this guy that, you know, like, you're an idiot. Why would an observation on baseball prompt you to respond with something racist? And then later, the guy completely got off Twitter and sent me, as fate would have it, he had a joint Twitter account with his wife, and his wife just got on him and said, why, you know, what did you do? You know, can you imagine your wife or your spouse, your girlfriend or your sister, parent, reading their Twitter account and wondering why they have all these mentions pointing out how much of a racist tool you are? Mm-hmm. Well, so long story short, a week later, the guy goes to my professional Facebook page and apologizes. And I told him, I said, listen, I've moved on. It wasn't a big issue for me. I just wanted to respond to you. And all I did was respond. I just said, congratulations. I figured, you know, my dad's from Mexico. I was born in LA, but my parents are from Mexico. And my dad would have this line that essentially, let there be one idiot, not two. And I was raised with that. So, you know, if you think somebody's an idiot, don't get into a fight with them, or just let there be one idiot, not two. So I just told the guy, I said, hey, you know, I'm done. You know, like, it's not an issue. Don't worry about it. And I thought he was just genuine in his apology. And then his response was, my wife is very upset. She was embarrassed by my comment. I apologize. Would you mind deleting, screenshot it? You know, I took a screenshot of it. And he says, would you mind deleting your tweet with the screenshot? And I never responded to him. Because I I spoke to, like he said, you know, I have children, and I'm one of eight children, and I text messaged my siblings the exchange. I text messaged them screenshots of the guy's private Facebook message, and I put it to my vote, to a vote. And three of my sisters said, no, don't take it down. Let this be a reminder to him that if you're going to put that crap on Twitter, wear it. And you know, as you all know, the Cardinals were pretty bad defensively in 2016, right?
Yeah.
And they were pretty bad defensively in 2017.
Yep.
So my pointing out the flaws should have been praised. Like, hey, you know, you see what's there. It's obvious. To me, it was obvious the first week. And that was pretty much my mindset for the first 6 months here in St. Louis, to just kind of point out, like, I wasn't going to take it or whatever and just say, hey, you know, really, is this how you're going to respond? And then I realized that nothing is gained by interacting with people who have such little regard for people of color that their interactions are just ignorant. So pretty much I either block people. Before, I would like just say, hey, you're blocked, and then I just stopped. I stopped letting people know. I just blocked them quietly or you know, just muted them. And it's amazing how, you know, I've had two or three guys send me angry emails and say, how dare you be from Twitter? You owe it to me to be accountable to me. And, you know, I'm accountable by trying to do my best for the paper, trying to write most honest opinions that I have and digging for answers. But nowhere in my job description does it say that I have to accept Twitter trolls sending me racist stuff.
Yeah,
you know,
Jose, this is Dr. Miles. I just want to follow up as my donkey bays in the background. Thank you for that. Thank you for telling that story. Oh, my gosh, they're all going to get going. I'm a father to six adopted children who are of different race than myself. And so what you said really resonated with me. And I love what your father's statement of let there be one idiot, not two. And so I just wanted to personally thank you for that. And go ahead, Josh.
Yeah, Jose, I remember actually pretty vaguely, but I do remember most of that because I started following you pretty early on because, you know, St. Louis and Cardinals, just like you said, there's not a whole lot else going on. And I think that early, I think you really settled into a nice role when it comes to, you know, St. Louis media. Early on, it felt, when you were interacting, I think it felt like you were, in a sense, taking up a mantle that was lost by Joe Strauss. I don't, that might be reaching a little bit. It just felt like, you know, the calling out of, you know, stupidity was kind of like his trademark thing, and I felt like you did a really good job of that. And as for the blocking everything, I'm not sure if you're familiar with him, but Shea Serrano is actually one of my favorite follows on Twitter, not just because of, you know, his insight, but his block game is very strong. I think if you, he has some fun with it. I think you could enjoy it if you looked into what he's doing. I think it's pretty entertaining.
Yeah, you know, one big regret of mine is that I've never met Shay, even though he used to work in Houston. I have no idea how we never met, but he does a lot of basketball stuff, and I was always focused on baseball. Yeah, but you know, I think if I were in Houston, I'd feel more comfortable to be free to be myself. In St. Louis, I decided that the best avenue is to quietly block people because, I noticed right away that the biggest people who had my back during that incident were all from Houston or Latino, and unfortunately here in St. Louis, there just aren't many Latinos, you know, that this is like nobody feel that it's worth, you know, like, man, you probably have to go all the way to January. Oh my Lord. You guys would laugh so much if you guys knew what a national columnist just texted me about the Astros crowd, which is hilarious. But, I got a text from my friend, it's no fun being, you know, I have 3 young daughters, and I don't, you know, one's on Twitter, and I don't want them to see the ugliness, so I just block people and do it quietly, because I found that it eases my mind, and it doesn't give them the satisfaction of like getting, because people, what I found is that people who are trolls like that, they want acknowledgement. They want to feel that they got your attention, or that they got to you, like, whereas, you know, there's a radio guy here, he doesn't work here anymore, but it took him like months before he realized that I had muted him. And this idiot, it was so funny because one of his Twitter followers said he probably muted you, and he wanted to get into this discussion about, like, he wanted to get into debates, and I you know, I told him, I said, listen, I'm at events. If you want to have a discussion, I'm at an event. We don't have to have a discussion via Twitter. And that's just, you know. And that's just the way I was raised. It's you know, I don't, if you look at, if you follow me on Twitter, you'll notice that I try, unless I'm saying something positive about somebody's work, I'm not, you know, I'm not having debates on Twitter with other journalists. You know, I find it ridiculous that when you have journalists attacking other journalists on Twitter, you know, but you know, everybody has to do what they're comfortable with. But I've been here, you know, I've been here 2 years, and it took me a very short while to realize that this is a city that it takes a while for outsiders to be welcome. you know, and I've learned that from the Cardinals, because friends of mine would say, hey, don't worry about that stuff. You know, St. Louis's were tough on Tony La Russa at first. And every outsider has had his era where this is the one city where they take pride in asking what high school you went to. I don't know, I've worked, most of my career has been spent at major cities where diversity is important, and transplants are a major flavor. Okay, Houston's the most diverse city in America. L.A., right there with it. New York, same thing. And when you have many transplants, it's easy for them to accept transplants. When you don't have many transplants, is you tend to be hesitant or less welcoming to outsiders.
Jose, I think all your points are really poignant, and I think that I've got a different view, of your mindset, and I really enjoyed listening to that. Now, I know we're probably going to lose you here soon, so I just want to switch gears real quick.
Trust me, we're good to go. My kid's still out there. She's out there till 8:30, so.
Oh,
awesome. She had a headache and was trying to whine about. She made me believe that she couldn't practice, so I didn't know if she'd come back in the car and says I. But she's out there running hard.
That's
fine.
Well, I'm gonna change gears to back to baseball for a second. We talked about the pitching staff a little bit, and I think one thing that's interesting was the comments about Reyes recently, about him getting brought up as a starter. Now, barring injury, this is say a healthy staff. Do you see him, in your opinion, in the rotation this year, and do you think that he could jump Jack in that situation, or is Jack slotted in as the number one option regardless of what Reyes does?
No. I believe if healthy, Alex Reyes will be your number two starter by the end of the season. Jack Flaherty's good. Don't get me wrong. He's really good. And he'll be a great, maybe number four, maybe number three this year. But Alex Reyes could be an ace. Okay, Alex Reyes, if healthy, if, he pitches to his potential. And don't take this from me. Take this from Adam Wainwright. Take this from Carlos Martinez. They're the ones who said this to me after watching them in spring training. So, no. This team, the reason I'm so high, the reason I picked them in the preseason to win the NL Central is because I really believed that once they get Reyes, they're going to have a 1-2 if Martinez stays healthy. Like, if all these statements are made with the assumption of these guys remaining healthy. Or getting healthy. If healthy, they have Martinez, Reyes, Weaver, and that's going to be a good little 1-2-3. And Michaelis, you've seen it. He's pitching real well. So I'm very high on this rotation. But there's Flaherty's ahead of Reyes now, obviously, but Reyes could be your number two starter in the playoffs.
And I think my question here then my kind of opinion on it was, when I heard the statement, it felt as if, you know, they weren't sure exactly when Reyes would be back with the team. Assuming that he gets 4 to 6 starts in his rehab assignment, or maybe even a little less, at what point in the season would you expect him to be with the team and pitching full time?
Well, remember, he's on the 60-day DL, right?
Right.
You guys have to remember that. So we're talking June.
Okay.
I wouldn't expect him. He's the type of guy who you want to be very careful with. You don't need to rush here. I wrote this when they signed Michaelis. And I wrote this numerous times. The Michaelis signing, I was very high on right away because I thought that signing bought developmental time for Flaherty and bought time for the Cardinals not to have to worry about rushing Reyes back. I didn't assume that Wainwright would be on the DL twice in the first month, but I thought if they could just get to May, they'd be fine. And I made that comment before they put Reyes on the 60-day DL. They're almost out of April, and Flaherty has been able to – has bought them that time. Now, they need Wainwright to get healthy and come back because I keep pointing out in every live chat, you can never have enough pitching. I can't tell you how many people ask me about trading Waka on my live chat over and over again the last 3 weeks. And I keep pointing out that I wouldn't trade Waka. And people say, well, but you have Flaherty. Well, guess what? Now you don't have Flaherty in the minors. You have Flaherty up. So if another guy gets hurt, now you're talking about John Gant or Gomber, right?
Mm-hmm.
So suddenly, I'm high on Gomber, but I think Gomber's probably like a guy that probably needs to be in the minor leagues for a couple more months to be able to help you consistently as a starter. And John Gant, he had a great spring, but John Gant is more of a number six starter or long reliever, right? At least that's what he's shown so far. So you need Wainwright to get healthy so that you have an option of deciding, you know what, we're going to keep Flaherty up and we're going to maybe skip Waino from time to time or maybe give one of the starters an extra day or two. But once you have Wainwright healthy and once you have Reyes healthy, man, you know, that's why I wrote today that even though they're on pace for 100 wins, this team is much better than it has played. They really play, and obviously they had a break in the schedule with the Reds, but you still have to beat the Reds.
Mm-hmm.
But they've
Which
done
they
all
couldn't
this.
Do last year.
Right. They've done all this without Greg Holland having one save opportunity. Greg Holland has more losses than he does save opportunities. Think about that for a second. Bowman, Myers, Norris, obviously. Who am I missing? Lyons. they've all had save opportunities. Greg Holland hasn't. You're paying Greg Holland $14 million this year because he's a stud all-star closer. Once he's in form, holy smokes, this bullpen's going to be really strong because Hicks.
Yeah.
I mean, where would this team be without Hicks?
Yeah.
So you're talking about Hicks, Norris being two brilliant, I mean brilliant decisions by the farms, by the front office. The decision to decide we cannot start the season without Hicks, and the decision in spring training to sign Bud Norris. Bud Norris has 5 saves and 5 chances. This team is in turmoil if not for Bud Norris, because he's come in and picked up some big time saves for this team. And if they lose, you know, 2 of those 5 games that he's had saves in, now suddenly you're looking at an 11-10 team. You know, so that's a big difference. If you're 11-10 versus 13-8, and you've already played 7 of your games that you'll play against the lowly Reds. So I'm really high on this team because, you know, Hicks is really good, and he has such a powerful arm that he can also get away with mistakes. Because when you throw a sinking 102-mile-per-hour fastball, you know, you're going to get away with some mistakes. But Bud Norris, I mean, Luke Gregerson missed the first 2 weeks of the season. So they Luke Gregerson, who was supposed to be a candidate to close, has only made 2 appearances. Okay? Greg Holland, who you signed to close, hasn't had 1 save opportunity yet. And he lost the game, and he struggled a couple of times. So you have to believe that in May, when Greg Holland is good, Greg Holland, man, this bullpen is going to be pretty good to have Jordan Hicks and Bud Norris setting up. And I mean, Tyler Lyons, I really hope that fans appreciate the job that Tyler Lyons has done as the only left-hander in this entire pitching staff. I mean, you know, Brett Cecil, God bless him, he had a horrible year last year. So we don't know what he would have done, but he's been on the DL. Ryan Sheriff came up, made some great contributions, then got hurt. They need somebody to another left-hander to get either Sheriff or Cecil to get healthy so they could ease some of that burden off Lyons. Dominic Leone, who you signed as a closer, or you acquired as a potential closer, who had the best spring of all the relievers, and who was your that's the other guy that I forgot to mention has more save opportunities. More blown saves than Holland has save opportunities. So think about it. Think about how you were going to work back with this bullpen here. You're going to have a good Holland, probably Jordan Hicks, and Norris as the 8th-7th, Gregerson, 8th-7th inning, Lyons, Matt Bowman is probably going to be your, you know, instead of being your workhorse that you're going to all the time, suddenly he's not as, there's not a big of a need to just ride him so hard.
Yeah, I think that that was one of Bowman's big problems last year was just overuse. And I think that based on everything you said, I think it's the front office deserves a lot more credit than they've been given, because a lot of people were questioning the Miles Mikolas signing when there was a Jake Arrieta on the market or a Hugh Darvish, and then they signed Bud Norris for cheap, and then he had a brutal spring, and people wanted him to get cut before he even pitched the game, and now he has been phenomenal. The only thing that I think that I relate to being a mistake, I guess you would say, by the front office was their handling of Greg Holland. I think that the choice to bring him up so soon before he really got more innings was a mistake. What do you think about their handling of Holland with where the bullpen was at the time?
I don't know. I mean, I would have asked them last week to accept a move back down for 10 days. That's how worried I was about them. But, you know, instead of going on an assignment to Memphis, he got to pitch against the Reds. So that's kind of like pitching against a AAA team, I guess.
Hey, they're winning 7-2 tonight, so don't worry. You can't say that.
Right. You know what I mean? So they have quite a bit of I'm trying to the Michaelis stuff, I'm just trying to figure out if people knew enough about baseball, if they'd have been good with him. But the Holland one, I think that everybody knew, like, it was an easier decision to argue. You know what I mean? Like the Michaelis one, nobody knew. But the Holland one, I think we all can say that he should have been in the minors longer, right? Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. Like, I just
yeah.
There's nobody has said Holland is ready. Like, nobody, not the Cardinals, not the manager, not Holland. So, but with all that said, if you consider, you know, who were you going to get? You know, Mike Myers. So he's taking Mike Myers' spot, right? He came up and so they, you know, he's just been one guy that's doing spring training in the majors, and they're 13-8. They would be. There's no guarantee that they win that game against Milwaukee that he lost. So maybe they'd be 14-7. But honestly, who would have been able to pick up those innings afterwards? Right? Like, you know, Mike Myers, a lot of Mike Matheny's cynics or critics were complaining that Mike Myers wasn't pitching enough. I mean, the Cardinals were winning, and people were complaining that Mike Myers was still sitting. You have to earn your stripes here. So if I had the choice between pitching a rusty Greg Holland or a Mike Myers, I'd have probably done the same thing.
I think that's fair. I think that's fair.
Yeah, I agree as well. I think that people got really concerned, and there's the folks that will jump out to the, oh, no, what are we doing? We're spending this money on this guy, and he's not good. I think that patience is so key, especially in a 162-game season. I don't understand how some people actually make it through the year without going into cardiac arrest from just insanely high blood pressure.
Well, I give Mo a lot of credit. they saw spring training and they saw problems. Okay? No matter what they were saying, they realized, at least internally, that it didn't make sense to go through a season with Dominic Leone as your closer. Right? Because let's go back to a month ago. Who is the Cardinals' closer at this time last month in spring training?
Right.
Dominic Leone.
Yep.
And at that point, they realized we can't do it. And then as soon as they gave Leone a chance, he proved that them correct, right? They didn't know nothing in Bud North's spring training told us that he'd be this crucial to the team. Because he struggled in spring training, which is an example of why spring training is so important and why people will tell you don't put too much weight on spring training stats with guys who have done it before. But more than that, they saw and had enough questions this spring that they realized that a guy they sent down first, the first guy kicked out of big league camp was Jordan Hicks. Well, guess what? Jordan Hicks is their most dominant reliever. And there's not a close second right now. So, major kudos to Matheny, to Yadier Molina, and Mike Maddox for convincing Mo that Hicks needed to be up.
And I thought, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No. So therefore, I think I like the Holland move. I would not have given Holland the money that he wanted, the commitment that he wanted in the offseason. But as I've pointed out many times, the Cardinals print money and $14 million on an all-star closer for a bullpen with a lot of holes is a very good investment.
And I kind of want to piggyback
Let me
clarify. Sure.
I'm not saying it has holes now. I'm saying a month ago, the holes were evident. And because we didn't know what Hicks was going to do, and we didn't know what North was going to do. So if you consider all that, And Gregerson was on the DL when they announced the deal for Holland. You know, so they had to sign Holland, because if they had it and Norris doesn't do what he does and Hicks doesn't work out, they'd have been in real, like I said, April could have looked a lot worse if not for Bud Norris and Jordan Hicks.
Sure, and what I was going to say was, you know, I think why we don't see Greg Holland going down to the minors is because of the money. You know, you're essentially saying the exact same thing with Adam Wainwright. You're not going to pay him $19.5 million to be a bullpen piece, for one thing. So if he's healthy to start, you're going to start him. And it's the same thing with Greg Holland. You're not going to pay him $14 million to go sit in the minor leagues for just to get prepared when he could have been in spring training camp this entire time. And obviously that is, you know, a little bit extreme given, you know, the circumstance surrounding this entire offseason. But that's what I fall back to when I, you know, talk to other Cardinal fans is you don't pay $14 million to be in the minor leagues. And it's the same thing. Well, you wouldn't do the same thing with Matt Carpenter right now either. You wouldn't send him down.
With Holland, it's a little bit different. Like
I
don't think it's about money. It's about where he would rather be. It has, because he knows.
Right.
you know, if he gets sent down, like, well, first of all, you can't send him down. Like, it has to be wherever he wants to prepare himself. And so you're considering, do you want Brevia or do you want Holland? So they're letting Holland work his way back. And the man, he's close now. I think he's very close to being your closer now. He's, you know, because he was, if he'd have gone back, he's only going to be there for 10 days. So, I'm trying to remember when he had his bad outing. Was it in Cincinnati where
he
was real
bad? The three walks, essentially.
Yeah, well, you got nobody out. His last bad outing was about 6 days ago, right?
Well, he pitched over the weekend.
No. But that was a good outing. No, what I'm saying.
Yeah.
I wrote a column. Thursday. What was the rain out? Thursday, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so Wednesday. He had the bad outing Wednesday. No, he had the bad outing Tuesday.
No,
whatever.
It was rain out Wednesday, and then Thursday he didn't do so hot.
Okay, so long story short, if he'd have been sent down Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, 5 days, so he'd be in the minors for five more days. So he's been able to pitch non-stressful, low leverage innings. He's gotten his work in. He's made two appearances since then. So that's good. That's what he would have done in Memphis anyway. So now you have him. Now you have him ready to go. This week against the Mets, and the bullpen. It was good to see that on Sunday they got Norris some much needed work, and they got Holland some much needed work. So when they return on Monday, if they have a safe situation, they'll have Hicks on 2 days rest, so Hicks should be able to give you an inning if needed. Norris and Holland, those are three good arms ready to go.
Sure. Well, before we let you go, I do want to ask you about a little something personal for me. You and I, I share being Latino with you, my family coming from Puerto Rico. So that, we share that in common. I want to talk about the Puerto Rico series. Recently I put an article out, saying, I think that MLB should put the Cardinals in the Puerto Rico series next year. What's your thoughts on that?
Well, I think that'd be great, but it has to be pretty much against the Marlins.
That's what I told my dad, and he didn't want to believe me. He said, why not the Cubs because of Javi Baez? And I said, that's a great point. Even in my article, I said, even the Houston Astros, because they're playing the AL West next year with Carlos Correa, there's your Puerto Rican connection there. But I kept telling him, that's going to be really difficult just because of travel. But then I thought, well, if the Cleveland Indians and Minnesota Twins can do it, why can't the Cardinals do that with in a team like that?
Answer your own question. Look at the teams you just mentioned.
Sure. And that's what
the Indians and the Minnesota Twins. They don't draw $3 million a year. The Cubs and the Cardinals. Do you really expect the Cubs and the Cardinals to give up that gate to go?
No, I don't, and I completely understand that. I'm definitely not blind to the economic impact, and that's something I also talked about in my article. I just think I definitely was writing it in a selfish perspective, thinking, because I think Yadier Molina deserves the credit, you know, for what he has done, what he's given to the Cardinals, and what he's given to Major League Baseball. And I think it would be a really cool way for, you know, Major League Baseball to honor him that way, because he's in his last couple years, you know.
Yeah. I agree with you 100% with that premise, but the fact is the romanticism of your idea is that's just not the way these owners think. And
yeah.
they'd rather honor Yachty with 43,000 people at Busch Stadium than give up, because, you know, those type of games work when you have, like the Mexico series, right? It's going to be who, the Dodgers versus the Padres, right?
Yeah.
Coming up in May. So the Dodgers wouldn't want to give up the gate, but the Padres have horrible attendance. So if you know, I'm assuming those games are, you know, Padres games, and they don't mind. You know, you take the Cardinals to Europe. You take the Cardinals to Japan. You don't take the Cardinals in the regular season, at least, to Puerto Rico. I could see them taking the Cardinals to Puerto Rico in the spring. That's a nice trip. But I just don't see, you know, I see the Cardinals, if they play in Puerto Rico during the regular season, I see them playing against the Marlins or against, let's see, you know, heck, the Reds.
You know,
somebody, you know,
at least it'll be a win, I guess.
No. Like, remember, this is a business, and
yeah,
all decisions are made, you know, even the Goodwill tours are about money, regardless of what they call them. And, you know, it's, you know, Francisco Lindor returning with the Indians is a great story. But as good as the Indians have done, they don't draw as well as other, you know, as other teams. Neither do the Twins. And so, you know, I'd love to see it. I'm sure Yachty would love it. And if it happens, I think it'll happen with you know, that type of scenario where they're playing,
sure,
a lowly team that gives up their gate.
Sure. Well, if it does happen, you're the first person I'm contacting and said, okay, let's go. let's do this. So,
I love Puerto Rico. I went to Puerto Rico with Carlos Beltran in 2006.
That's awesome. Well, good. I'm glad you got a chance to visit. Yep. My family, most of my extended family, my grandparents, they still live there. So, you know, my family and I have definitely been battling hurricane issues. And so I just, you know, again, selfish reasons for the Cardinals playing there. I just think it would be a nice tribute, and especially with the, you know, the dinner that they're putting on, you know, the Yadier Molina Foundation that they're putting on in St. Louis here in June. I think it's just, it all lines up, and I'm definitely a sucker for these kinds of things. So.
Yeah, no. I'll tell you a little bit about my career. Okay. What things that I'm very excited to say that I covered. I covered the first Major League regular season games outside of Canada and the U.S., and it was Padres-Mets in 1996 in Monterrey, Mexico. I covered the first opening day game, Major League Baseball opening day game outside of North America, Cubs Mets in 2000 at the Tokyo Dome. So, I get it. But when you pull teams from New York or Chicago or a storied franchise like the Cardinals, it's going to be a showcase event with – it's going to be a showcase event, you know. Like if they, if Major League Baseball plays a regular season game in Europe, that's the type of game that you take the Cardinals to. You take, you know, you take the Yankees, you take the Red Sox, you take the Cardinals, the Dodgers, you know. Those are the organizations that you take.
True. Completely understandable. Guys, do you guys have any more questions before we turn Jose loose for the night?
No, Jose, thank you very much. This was great. I love getting your insight on things.
Sounds great. Thanks a lot, guys. I really appreciate it. It was really
well,
fun.
Well, yes. So, yeah, Jose, thank you so much for your time tonight. And hopefully
we can get
you back on. I know that I speak for everybody here at Redbird Brands. We do appreciate your time. And I know I want to say thanks again to Crash for getting us connected. And again, I'm looking for you as soon as they announce the Cardinals to Puerto Rico. So we'll stay in touch on that way, okay? Thanks again for your time, Jose. We appreciate it.
All right. Take care. Bye-bye.
And that was Jose De Jesus Ortiz from the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. Guys, what a great conversation with the man. Lots to take away from it. Definitely, you know, a different aspect of what we have seen, you know, from our first two guests, being more of a play-by-play kind of people and whatnot. But Jose brought up some really good points, especially when it came to Reyes and to Greg Holland, and even some stuff about Adam Wainwright. You know, if he's healthy, you know, he deserves to pitch. You know, Dr. Miles, what did you take away from this conversation tonight?
Man, I'll tell you, you know, he really talked about the business side of things and the place that players hold on the team and that sort of thing. And that's a perspective that I think we as fans oftentimes forget. Additionally, you know, and I know that the question that I ask, but I love all the things, and not just for the question that I asked, but I love all the human aspects and the human connections that he shared with us. And that's what I've really enjoyed from all of these guys coming on, is that there's a side to this business for them that, you know, we may read their piece and we forget that they take their daughters to a soccer practice when their daughter's complaining about headaches. You know, I mean, it's that sort of thing that we also as fans forget. But in terms of what he talked about for the team, I mean, one of the things that resonated with me from what he said was that idea of trading Waka, because I know that I've sort of talked about that before too, of, you know, you've got all this protection behind them. Let's use the value that we have. Well, and I wonder if that begs the issue with Carson Kelly. You know, we've oftentimes talked of trading Carson Kelly, but what if you really do need him? Maybe that is just sitting in Memphis, but it's protecting everybody up above. And, you know, like you said, you can never have enough or too much pitching. So I thought he just really gave us a lot of stuff to mull over, a lot of things to add in. I'm really excited to sit down tonight and keep working on my Greg Holland piece, where I'm looking at all the numbers that he's posted in 2018 as it compares to his career, a good analysis piece. And I think it's very interesting, because what he said was, let the man get heated up. I'm going to tell you guys, there's 3 years to look at, and that's 2011, 2013, 2014. If Greg Holland can hit those numbers, whew, I'm going to tell you, it's going to be real tough on the back end of the Cardinals bullpen.
Yeah, and I want to say something quick about the question you asked about the races in St. Louis, and, you know, what fans project onto to them, and I'm sure you had me in mind at some point as well, whenever we had to deal with a particular commenter on one of my articles. And, you know, what he had to say about that kind of stupidity, I'm going to say, you know, it resonated with me as well, mainly because I was subjected to very similar things. And I know Josh even stepped in and commented on that. And commented on the original poster, and you know, I wrote an article saying, you know, say no to racism because it just doesn't belong. It's not, it has nothing to do with sports, and I wanted to jump in, but I, you know, for the sake of time, I didn't. But I really wanted to thank Jose for saying what he said, because it did resonate with me, and you know, anybody listening tonight, you know, I would expect. You know, if you ever encountered it or you saw anybody doing it, you call them out because it's not the right. It, you know, it's not right. There's no
yeah,
room
and
for
I,
it.
Yeah, and
I did have
you in mind. I definitely remember that. I remember that was sort of early on, and I remember mm-hmm. that the thing that I said to Jose was, you know, I love that his dad said, "Let there be only one idiot."
Right.
And I think even
right.
I wasn't as eloquent as that in what I said to you, mm-hmm. but I think I remember saying we can't feed it. You know, we there's no reason to make an overt response, and your response to it was writing a piece, and it was such an eloquent piece and so well put together because that is the response that needs to be made. That's
right.
The power that we have, and quite honestly, just like you said, that's the power that all of us as humans have. Is we can put a stop to things when we see it happening. And I wrote a piece a couple of years back about Tyler Denning, I've forgotten his last name. You know, he was the minor league player from the Cardinals who came out as gay and talked about, you know, all of the ridicule that he suffered. And at the end of that piece, I said, to me, the biggest part of life is, I hate the phrase that we're all, I want to be colorblind, because I think that's not attainable. What I want to be able to say is that I see the difference between us, but it doesn't make a difference. And that's to his point and to your point and everything. So I agree with you, Tito. I loved that he told us that story. That was a very personal thing. And I did have you in mind. I remember that whole exchange. And yes, thank you to Josh for jumping in. And quite honestly, let me just say this too. We have a great group of guys who write for Redbird Rant. We have all come to each other's defenses in many, mm-hmm. many different ways, laughed together, mm-hmm. taken up for each other on social media and things of that nature, because we've all had targets placed on us. We've all been called, you know, morons and unfortunately worse phrases than that. What a great group of guys. Just a huge shout out to that. I think you mentioning Josh jumping in was the testament to that. And so kudos to you, Josh. And again, I'm just so grateful he gave that story.
Yeah,
hey,
let's not forget Josh. Yeah, go ahead.
I just want to say, you can attack Tito for being dumb. You can attack Tito for being goofy. You can't attack him for who he is as a person. If you want to say he's stupid, I'll back that up all day. Anything other than that, I'm going to come at you.
I think that's very true with our group, because we all have such a great relationship now on our Twitter group that we attack each other fairly, equally, and from a place of heart. But I do think, like you said, Josh, if you come at one of us on a personal level, you come at all of us. And I think I would now come to Jose's defense. I would have come to it before, certainly, but now I will go on that front line with him for sure.
Sure.
Yeah, I think.
Go ahead.
I think
Josh.
Going into this, we intended on, you know, talking baseball, but honestly, the biggest takeaway for me is everything he talked about more to his personal life, and I thought it was so great to hear all that. But honestly, one part of it was so unbelievably disappointing to me was his story that no one in the area defended him. And I get he was new, but that's disappointing to hear.
It is, but at the same time, I get it. I mean, think about what he said right after that. You know, outsiders are not treated very nicely. I think the biggest mantra that I have heard when it comes to racism or anything like that are people are afraid of what they don't know. And that is true, you know, back then as it is today. So people may not, you know, who don't know Jose on a personal level or even as a writer, they're not going to know what to think. And it's the same way we probably said, thought in our heads the same thing. You know, we don't know who he is. We'll see how he writes. And, you know, unfortunately, there is an ugly side of St. Louis that does exist. And that's true for pretty much every city. It's not just St. Louis. You know, you could probably find it anywhere in the world. But you're right, Josh. It is disappointing that nobody really came to his defense. But I think I attribute that to just people are just – they didn't know how he would act. And if they, you know, if he was willing to call out one guy, you know, what else would he do? And nobody in today's society is willing to do that anymore. You can't call somebody out without somebody taking a screenshot or firing back at you. And I think that's part of the problem.
Well, I think this was a giant success. What a great
No, yeah, I'm, yeah, I mean it was, and it was great to hear him speak, and I really hope that he will join us again, and I'm sure he would be delighted to do that. Any more takeaways before we get off the air tonight?
No, I'm interested to see this team going forward now that we're done with, you know, playing AAA teams until June. I'm interested to see what they can do with this confidence going up against some contenders.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. And I mentioned it in our chat the other day, you know, the Cardinals had not, they were 3 wins away from last year's season total wins against the Reds. And even Jose pointed it out, you know, they were not good against the Reds going 10-9. So they've already, you know, are close to that mark. Now when it comes up to the Mets this week, you know, the Cubs next weekend, you're still in a pretty tough schedule, right, Dr. Miles?
Yeah, it's, you know what, it's going to be a great test because – I think one of the things that all of us aren't mentioning, the big elephant in the room, is this. Look, we just, you know, swept the Reds and then swept the Reds, and we're sort of flying high, but we're all concerned, is it going to stick, or is there going to be, you know, a regression? And I think this is the test. Absolutely.
Yeah. So, guys, that's going to do it for us tonight. Thank you to all our listeners for listening to Episode 3 of Extra Innings. We appreciate it so kindly. And also thank you for going on RedbirdRants.com for reading all of our stuff and giving us the feedback we so thoroughly or maybe not thoroughly deserve at times. For Josh and Dr. Miles, I'm Tito, and we will see you next time. Check us out on Thursday for another live edition of the official Redbird Rants podcast, where we will have more baseball to talk about. Let's go Cards.